Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to my session. In this session, I will first walk you through the basic concept and technology of U2S, and then I will reveal potential security threats introduced by U2S derived mechanism. Then in the end, I will give some mitigation and countermeasures. About me, my name is Wang Kang. I'm from China, and I work for Alibaba Group, which is one of the largest e-commerce companies in China. And my research focusing on IoT, Internet of Things, and vehicle to everything, and trusted computing and cyber physics systems. I was a speaker of Black Hat USA 2017 on resonating ultrasound to smart devices to mess with the VR device or iPhone or drones. And I was a speaker of Black Hat Euro 2015 about GPS spoofing and Wi-Fi spoofing location. It's very tricky things. I also a founder of an open source mirror site in China called Tuna. Yeah, Tuna. And this is my email address. It's very easy to remember. you only have to remember the 8. Oh, 028. It's very easy to remember. And I was a very lucky Linux kernel contributor. You can find this output is one. Only one line of this kind of code. Very interesting. About TDDLT USB driver. Okay, the introduction to U2S. So what is U2S? It's called universal two-factor. As we know, two-factor authentication is considered to be the most secure way to put user's account in assist mode. So what is FIDO? Because we also call it FIDO U2S. The FIDO means Fast Identity Online, open standard alliance founded by Google and I think Ubicom. Now the U2S devices manufactured including Ubicom based in Sweden, and the NaturalKey is a proud German company, I think. I'm freaking a Chinese company. Now the U2S has many benefits over the traditional key because, for example, they have native support for Chrome browser, and other browsers are supported on the way, like Firefox. You can at least use a plugin to do U2S authentication, and it is driver free because it uses USB HID protocol, basically like the keyboard or mouse. And it's also the physics layer, or the raw message layer, can be run around the BTLE, means Bluetooth Low Energy, and NFC. And this is a brief history of FIDO U2S. In 2012, Ubicom and Google created U2S. And 2013, the U2S technical certifications is put into the FIDO lines. And for 2014, the support for Gmail and Chrome starts. And the 2016 UK government. And I think 2017, I remember the early of 2017, Facebook supports U2S as well. And now the portfolio, I think Facebook, Dropbox, and GitHub, all of them now supports U2F. And for open source projects like GitLab, and we're the proud GitLab user. Yeah. GitLab and WordPress now supports U2F by a simple plugin you install it. So what is the principle of U2F? It's nothing new, I think. It's basically the public and private key system. As for the relying party, you can think it as Gmail, Facebook, or the other cloud service provider. And for the client, you can consider it to be the browser. And the US usual device you can think is only this big. So the relying party, it has the record of your public key. And so when the second factor authentication starts, the relying party sends the key handle and application ID and challenge down to the client. So the key handle, basically, you can think it as an index to your private key stored in your USB device. And app ID, basically, they are app ID are the domain name of your HTTPS site. And the client, after the client receives those parameters, they check the application ID first. Then the client simply forward all the parameters to your UTF device. The UTF device has a microcontroller to handle the USB protocol. So first, the UTF device look up the private key associated with the key handle H. Yeah. Then the counter inside, which I will be talking later, the counter issue. The counter increased by one. Then the counter, the other parameters assigned by the security element, which is a cryptographic chip, I think. They return a signature from the security element. Then all the parameters are sent back to the client. The client then forward it to the cloud. Then the cloud checks the signature and finishes the whole verification. This is a snapshot of the Dropbox. I fired up the Chrome web debug console. This is a challenge they forwarded from the browser to the USB device. This is a snapshot I think I can show you in web. Because I plug this. It's an open source one. Yeah. I first register it with like CCC, DDD. Next. Then it's performed. My device now can grab. I have to plug the. Oh, there's a new feature I didn't find before. And the technical data includes the origin, the domain name, and the challenge, FID. And response data is from my key. And then I log in with the link password. I also have to press the button. Then the second factor authentication is successful. The response data, and the signature data, and the counter, and my user presence indicator, touch, the Boolean parameters. On the background, is v2f.py, it's an open source project, and U2F emulator for debugging. I think the demo.utico.com/u2f, the site is very useful for basic technical explanation. And one of my friends built a U2F Zero, an open source key, this one for me. So the design is very simple. It only has eight components. This is the button for user presence, and this is the LED. And this is for electric protection. And this is a microcontroller. And this is the security element. The security element is from Atmel, ATDCC508A. It has 16 slots for public key and private key storage. Now, the question comes. If the storage capability is 16, that means we have only 16 websites to validate this single key. So the final UTF has a support for infinite key numbers. So what did they do? So let me do some basic explanation. So the security element, the chip, stores public key and private key pairs. And the on-chip operation supports key generation and data signing. And it also supports key importation from outside, from your computer to the security element. And it has a problem of limited storage. So the solution is use a single device secret, which means the master key. And we use a key derivation mechanism called key wrapping to regenerate all the essential private key from one single master key. This is from the FIDO UTF standard file. A UTF device, the key handle, remember the key handle H, doesn't have to be the index to the private key. Instead, the key can store for the origin and the hash and to unwrap, to retrieve the private key. So as for the open source project UTF-0, its later version of formula supports this formula. Remember, the key handle is sent from the cloud to your device, and it has the nums, it's a random number. And the private key, you can, after you receive the nums, the UTF-0, the microcontroller, get these nums, and the app ID, which is the website, its domain name. And the device key is stored on this chip. They do a HMAC. This HMAC operation is inside this security element. So they regenerate the private key. Then the HMAC part, the private key, can do another HMAC to the verification of the whole process. So it's very neat and easy mechanism. And for the Ubiquo company, they don't have the essential open source code for audition. So they provided a diagram, basically the same principle. From the red part is the regular UTF operation. You get an app ID, you get a private key, you do a HMAC, you send it to your, you do the signature. But the blue part is the key derivation process. So should we be worried about anything of this process? Someone asked in the Ubiquo forum in 2016, November. He says, I was given a YubiKey. I want to reset the U2F secret, which is the master secret. Is this possible? Or a similar question was asked in 2014, and the answer then is might come in the future. But in 2016, the Ubiquo guys said there's no way to reset this. You have to trust us. So I was very paranoid, so I do some experiment. So my proposed attack scenario is first, the attacker extracts the master key during the manufacture process of this UBKey. This U2F0 is an open source project. Then, attacker clone this U2F key. In this case, we integrated with a software U2F implementation called V2F.py. Then, the attacker gives the U2F key to a victim. Then I'll assume the victim used this key to register with Google or other services. Then attackers get to know the password from like phishing or torturing or something. Then login. This is a scenario. And after some cryptographic experiment and some simple coding, I come up with these results. This is the regular authentication process. I use this key to authenticate with the demo site. It's a regular process. Then I unplug it, use the V2F.py. I integrated the key-wrap mechanism with V2F.py. Then the login was a success. I tried another website called Gmail. No big deal. It's the same principle. Then tried with Facebook. Because it's cloned, so it's not that scary. I cloned this key during the manufacture process. Facebook and GitHub. And the last one is a Australian email wire called Fastmail. It's very fast, so I use it. I was called Fastmail email. The first part is no big deal, just like other case. But I tried to roll the anti-clone counter back by one. Now the anti-clone counter is two. I can control it and roll it back to one. And the login process still works. So the Fastmail didn't check the anti-clone counter. And I sent an email to them. Okay, what is anti-clone counter? So first, inside the security element, this is a sentence from the datasheet of ATEC 508A. It says the counter is a high endurance monotonic counter, which means you can't roll it, control it using your firmware. And let's say the victim or the user now has a state of counter of 100. Then the next time he authenticate with the cloud, the counter goes by 1 to 101. So the cloud only has to check whether the new counter is larger than any of recorded counters. So if an attacker cloned this key, he has two ways. First, just to guess a very large counter, let's say 900. But this scenario is not so good because the victim will surely be aware of, because he has to press 801 times to bypass, to let his key be bigger than the victim's, the attacker's 900. So if the attacker is smart enough, he can do the best try of 102. He just patiently to do every check. So as for Google and Facebook, they didn't give a warning when this scenario happens. So our key findings has two basic key findings. First is the security model. In traditional key model, I think, is basically about the ultimate trust root. Let's say if you have a bank account, we trust the bank ultimately. So we also trust the key issued by everything issued by the bank. So we also trust the traditional dedicated USB security. But these keys, like this one is open source. This one is a commercial of the COTS key. So these are general purpose USB key. You can buy from other website or be given from a friend. So these keys bring us a new problem to the security model. We should downgrade the trust level from the ultimate, which means also can be called the cryptographic chip level, downgrade to manufacturer trust level, which means after we receive this chip, we should at least do a heat regeneration process or to generate our key from in an AGAT computer and write the key to the USB device. Actually, the OpenPGP card has this support. And anti-clone counter should be well implemented. For example, Google and Facebook, when the rolling back event occurs, I think they don't give users a bell warning. And as for Fastmail, they didn't check at all. So I report this issue to them and they confirm. So with the mitigation from the service provider side, first we should downgrade the trust level, as I already mentioned. And the third one is we should well implement the clone detection. First, of course, we could aware the user's warning. And second, I think, it's very easy way to do it, because when the rolling back events was detected, the website can revoke this key pair. And maybe we think this is not a very convenient way, user-friendly way to our users, but it's two-factor. You just do the factor. You still can use your phone to do a SMS communication or your email. So I think the revoke is not that non-user friendly. So the conclusion is, I think this is can be classified as a supply chain risk, because during this manufacture process, whether the manufacturer itself or the related supply chain providers, they can do something bad to your cryptographic device. Actually, do you remember I just said the cryptographic, the security element, the cryptographic chips can do a key to import process. Actually, in this open source project, I found there is some sort of time I can generate, I can export the master key from the generation point. So whether you use the security element or not, this issue should be well considered as a supply chain risk. Secondly, I think as far as I know, we give a first real-world example of this kind of attack. Before, we only have some forum complaints, but this time we have an experiment. And I think it's not that bad, but I think it's a real-world example. And we found that uneconomic mechanism is not well implemented in some websites. And I think the best practice is to walk and revoke. These are my friends in this research providing ideas and tuna association. Yeah. And future work, I think in a few weeks before, FIDO has a new standard called FIDO 2. They are providing a new authentication to do passwordless authentication. But I don't have the time to take a look at it. Maybe this could be a future one. The second, a phishing website we could build to try to extract the master key, reversing the HMAC function. A friend, a teacher, a professor of mine, he's a cryptographic master. He says the HMAC reversion is not that difficult. I don't know, maybe this could be a... So I think if you can use this open source version, you can roll it back to the original firmware. The original firmware only uses the 16 key slots inside the security element. So you can only bind these keys to 16 websites, since it's secure enough. So thank you. And any questions?
Sites that locked the account when too many false counter tries were received?
As far as I know, I only tried with 3 faults, so not that much. So maybe Google now has some new risk control rules, but I don't do this experiment.
Okay, a second question. You mentioned that there is an admin chip on the board that you use, or maybe on the YubiKey too, and I'm not sure. But do you think it's possible to disorder the chip and reset it for reasons and flash your own private key?
You said the port to reset the key.
Yes, I think the problem that you introduce is that the manufacturer can copy the key, copy the key while flashing it or generating it on the chip. And if I reset the chip after I bought it or disordered it and do my own generation, I should be safe if I understand the problem.
Yeah, but the key generation process is not an easy process. You have to send a lot of, as I think, the inner commands to the function of the chip. So I think it is only by fault. It's not that easy to do regeneration.
Okay.
Actually, some years ago, there is side channel tag on YubiKey, and later they fixed it by another. The side channel attack basically is the power. You use an oscilloscope to narrow the voltage and during the AES or other cryptographic operation. I remember at least 3 years ago do this side channel attack to YubiKey, but they have fixed it.
Okay.
Main engine cutoffs. Any questions? Okay, then thank you guys.